Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyano.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we are going to talk about that excellent Ajax-Juve match up front with the Serie A weekend coming up. We're going to make some game picks with our dear friend Thousand Names. We're going to circle a little bit around Lazio, since we've been talking a lot about the teams in the race for a Champions League spot with our friend Steve Moore. We, of course, have Twitter questions from our listeners with a bonus sections for our patrons. Thank you so much for your support. And we're going to end the podcast with a great interview with my friend Enrico Passarella from Padova, where we took a really intriguing deep dive on the race to avoid relegation, breakout stars in Serie B. You guys know on Calcioland, we like to cover all of Italian football, not just the top teams. But we are going to start with the perennial Serie A champions to talk a little bit about this excellent Ajax-Juve match. And I'm joined by our dear friend, the producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. And Alex, you've been hyping Ajax a lot on the podcast. And look, I had seen them against Real Madrid. I never pretend that I watch a lot of leagues outside of Serie A, but I got to say, I was very impressed with what I saw yesterday from Ajax. So let me ask you, you know, what were your takeaways? Were you surprised by anything? What stood out to you in this game?
Yeah, I mean, my first takeaway is something I wasn't surprised by, but just how fearless Ajax are. I mean, they're just absolutely fearless. They don't care who they're playing against. And you already learned that when they were away to Real Madrid in the second leg in the last round of the Champions League, and they pummeled Real Madrid. And they just play with this togetherness. They have a lot of young players who have played together now for a couple seasons, but it really is more than that in terms of how long they've played together. It's just the spirit they have on the pitch. And there's this great, great still photo on Twitter, and it's actually, there's a quote above it from Johan Cruyff saying, in football, you have to play with no fear. I'm probably butchering the quote, but it's a picture of, I think, four, five, maybe even six Ajax players, all pretty deep into Juventus half, maybe four of them already in Juventus box, and they just play with that fearlessness, and it really shows. I mean, it was a great game, in my opinion, just for a neutral to watch. But really, I mean, a 1-1 draw, and you could argue that Ajax, if anything, deserved probably to get the 3 points, because I thought they were the better team until Ronaldo scored. And I mean, real quick on Ronaldo, just in my opinion, I don't like the overall GOAT conversation. We've talked about this, but I think he's the Champions League GOAT. And David, maybe also the GOAT of heading goals. I mean, just his ability to score headers is ridiculous. But then even after Juventus scored, Ajax, right out of the half, David Neres, one of my favorite players, to be honest, my favorite player is not on Chelsea, scores a golazo with his right foot, not even his strong foot. And they just played with just this intensity. I mean, and also for neutrals that maybe want to look at Ajax and some of their star young players, I thought it was a great showing. I thought Matthias De Ligt, for any Juventus fan who's interested in him, I thought he was good. I definitely think he certainly proved to be worth the price of admission, whether you were at the game or watching on TV. And how about Frankie de Jong? How about Frankie de Jong, who had 100, you know, I'm going to get into some stats right now, had 117 touches, had a 91% passing accuracy with all those touches against a very good Juventus, and had six tackles. I mean, really, it looks to be everything that he's hyped up to be. And Hakim Ziyech, David, he's gotten this comparison before. I'm not making it, but some people call him the J.R. Smith of football, where he just pops shots and he doesn't care. And he also does kind of play with a fearlessness. And it's just kind of what Ajax is all about. So I was really impressed by Ajax. And if anything, like I said, I think maybe they deserve the 3 points. But I think 1-1 is a fair result. And I think I tweeted this last night, but if you don't have a dog in the fight in the Champions League this season, make it Ajax. I mean, make it Ajax, because they're a really easy team to get behind. So that was my takeaway, David. What about you?
Yeah, so you covered very well the Ajax part. Like I mentioned, I hadn't watched much of them, but I came away really impressed with what I saw. Probably my favorite team to watch. And again, very small sample size for me since Sarri is
Napoli. So on the Juve side, this is kind of like, I left this match, you know, if you're a Juve fan hoping they get past the next round, kind of a mixed bag. I feel maybe a little bit disappointing because they had taken the lead with Ronaldo. And as you mentioned, they gave up the goal right after the half. You know, we had the Douglas Costa post, but Ajax were the better team on the pitch. I think, you know, before the match, knowing that Chiellini and Emerson, who's been playing really well recently, were both going to be out, and you were going to be stuck with Rugani, who I thought played really well yesterday, but have no problem criticizing him, but I'll give him credit. I thought that was a very good performance from him yesterday. And Bonucci, who's been very shaky defensively, and he's been in the middle of a lot of controversy. I think, you know, going into the match, I think you would have taken 1-1 as the result. They have an away goal. You know, if Ajax doesn't score in Turin, Juve goes to the next round, I think you'd take that. But I think, you know, considering they had taken the lead, it was a little bit, you got to leave that match a little bit disappointed. So great job by Rugani. I thought Alexandro played really well. I thought Cancelo, brilliant on the goal. For Juve, not so brilliant on Ajax goal. I thought Bentancur had a good performance. He had started the season very strong, faded a little bit. So overall, I think an intriguing match. I think Allegri, you know, rightfully so, maybe got a lot of criticism for continuously starting Mandzukic. We saw what a difference Douglas Costa made in the second half. It seems that Allegri really sees him as a super sub to bring in the last half hour of a game. Maybe not the worst strategy, but Mandzukic, and we saw this a little bit this time last year when on the podcast we were saying that he kind of looked like a Finnish player, and then we saw how great he was at the World Cup, but he's really more of a first half of the season type player now. So overall, I think you have to be happy with the result for Juve, knowing that Chiellini and Sean were out, but you got to leave maybe a little bit disappointed also because you have to believe very impressed with Ajax and firmly believing that they can score a goal in the return leg, which is coming up already next week. So let me tell you, let me ask you, Alex, kind of how do you see this shaken out in the second leg? What percentage do you give to each team?
You know what? I hate to be boring with my percentage, but I'm going to give Ajax a 50% chance of moving on. And sure, it's going to be a home game for Juventus. However, it was going to be a home game for Real Madrid in the return leg, and Ajax ended up winning 4-1. Now, some people say, well, lightning doesn't strike twice, but that's just, I'm sorry, that's not applicable in this situation. Ajax, the number one thing I said in the first answer, David, is their fearlessness. They don't really care that it's going to be a home game for Juventus. They don't care that they might be the underdog on the Vegas lines. They don't care about any of that. Now, the one thing that Juventus has going for them and Ajax doesn't, and I've talked about this, is Juventus has their league wrapped up, and Ajax does not. However, I'm going to be a little hypocritical if I say that's too much of a factor, because I just said previewing the match the other day on Monday that Ajax has done a great job in league of still keeping their players fresh, and they are doing a good job of catering to both of these competitions and not being at all distracted when it comes to the other one. Obviously, I think if they had to choose, they would just go for the Champions League. But I think they also think with the comeback they've made in the Eredivisie, they'd really like to wrap up that title as well. And I think they're very capable of doing both. I really just think that Ajax will give Juventus everything they can handle. But, David, you got to think that when Ronaldo has a chance to propel his team on in a second leg of a Champions League tie, there's a pretty good chance of that. So I'm literally giving, and this is no insult to Juventus, I'm giving Ajax a 50% chance of moving on, and I'm giving Ronaldo a 50% chance of moving on. So that's my answer, David. What about you?
Yeah, it's a tough one because, again, you know, the first leg against Atletico was disastrous for Juve. Obviously, they're in much better shape now. But Ajax really seems like a team poised to be able to score in Turin. They haven't lost any away match in this edition of the Champions League. I think you mentioned that they are fearless. They play their style, which in some ways you could say this really plays into Allegri's hands. And I had kind of tweeted this in the first half when I saw Ajax, you know, really pushing forward and Juve going on the counter. It's like Allegri kind of has them right where they want, where he wants them. But you could have said the same about the first leg against Atletico. So I'm very curious. I think Ajax, they're going to definitely try to score early. I want to see how Allegri handles it. I think Juve having the return leg in Turin does help them because they have the away goal. So I'm going to give Juve a 57% chance and 43% to Ajax, but definitely a fascinating match coming up.
Amen. I like the 57%. That's very on the dot. So well done there. I was pretty boring with my 50%. But David, all right, let's move away from the Champions League and let's look ahead to Serie A. It's a Thursday, so we're going to do our normal game picks with you and Thousand Names. So who do we got for this weekend?
Okay, so by now you guys know the drill. Thousand Names picks three games that both him and I pick. I have the advantage of knowing his picks ahead of time, but he picks the matches. Also, if you're interested in more content on our Patreon page, I make my picks for all the Serie A matches of the weekend. Seen my streak recently, you definitely should be betting against what I pick. But in any event, if you're interested, you can read them on our Patreon page. But on the podcast, we're going to pick three matches. Thousand Names, the first one he picked is Juve traveling to Ferrara to face Spal. He has it 1-1. Goal by Lazzari and Khedira. And he says Allegri is going to celebrate a Scudetto that nobody cares about 3 days before he's eliminated from the Champions League. And he says the Agnelli family have no clout in Europe. In Italian, Spal Juve 1-1, Lazzari Khedira. Allegri festeggia uno Scudetto che non interessa a nessuno. A tre giorni dall'eliminazione della Champions, gli Agnelli in Europa non contano niente. Yeah, I'm going to agree. Spal still in the relegation race. I don't know how motivated Juve is, especially with Ajax coming up. So I'm going to give it actually. You know what? I'm guilty of making Serie A games low scoring in my predictions, and then we see that there is high scoring. So I'm going to go 2-2. I'm going to give Petagna and Lazzari, I'll agree with 1,000 goals, and I'll give Dybala a brace, and he could really use that right now. Next up, we have a very underrated derby, one of my favorite ones, Derby della Lanterna, Sampdoria, the host for Genoa. 1,000 has Sampdoria winning 2-0 with a brace by Quagliarella, and he says the city of Genova is and remains Blu Cerchiata, which is Sampdoria's nickname. He says Prandelli's on his way to getting sacked and that Giampaolo is going to teach him some life lessons. In Italian, Samp Genoa 2-0, Quagliarella doppietta, Genoa estate resterà blucerchiata, Prandelli verso l'esonero, Giampaolo gli spiega la vita. So Samp lost at home against Roma last weekend. Genoa, and we'll talk about it with Guardalini, they're kind of hovering on the relegation race, but almost out of it. So I'm going to go with 1-1. I'm going to give De Frel, who's been playing well, a goal, and Kwame, my favorite player on Genoa, a goal there. Last pick by Thousand Name, and this is the big match of the weekend on Saturday. Milan-Lazio. 1,000 has Milan winning 1-0, goal by Piontek. And he says, once again, Limone Inzaghi. So Lemon Inzaghi is going to win a direct confrontation tomorrow. So it says he's going to fall short once again in this big match. Leonardo, after getting embarrassed against Juve in the post-game match, is going to get compensated with a refereeing decisions in his favor. And he says, thank God UEFA punished Milan with financial fair play. So kind of all over the place here, 1,000. In Italian, Milan-Lazio 1-0, Piontek. Anche oggi Limone Inzaghi vince uno scontro diretto domani. Leonardo, dopo la figuraccia contro la Juve, viene ricompensato con un arbitraggio indecente. Per fortuna l'UEFA li ha puniti. So I gotta say, I was pretty impressed with Milan against Juve. I know they lost. Lazio coming off two disappointing matches, and we'll get into it in a second with Steve Moore. So I am going to agree with 1,000. I am going to have Milan winning 2-1. I'm going to give Piontek and Kalanoglu a goal, and Immobile one. So to recap, Fausen and I agree. Spal Juve draw. Fausen has Samp beating Genoa. I have it as a draw, and we both have Milan losing Lazio. And you can read the rest of my picks on Patreon. So now let's we're going to chat with our dear friend Steve Moore, get an update on Lazio before we get to your Twitter questions. So during the interviews, we have been making our rounds with the teams involved in the Champions League race. So we talked about Milan and Roma on the last episode, and today we are going to talk about Lazio. So we have a returning guest to talk about the Biancocelesti, my friend Steve Moore, who is one of my colleagues on Di Marzio's English page, but his connection to Lazio is mainly with his outstanding Twitter account and site called D_Laziale. There's a lot of excellent content on Lazio there. So, Steve, always a pleasure to chat with you. Welcome back to Calcioland.
Hi, David. Pleasure to be here.
Okay, so let's start talking about the current state of Lazio. So all season long, they had struggled against the top teams. Milinkovic-Savic hadn't scored against the top team. All that changed against Milan. They seemed to have a lot of momentum in their favor. Then Milan lost to Juve. Everything was setting up for Lazio making a run for this Champions League spot. But we had a series of disappointing results recently. So let me ask you very simply, what was more frustrating or disappointing, the loss in Ferrara to Spal or the recent home draw to Sassuolo?
Both were very frustrating, but I'm going to have to say the Sassuolo defeat. With Spal, they were away. And I know that a loss obviously hurts, especially with VAR ruining the day right at the end there, but Lazio dominated the match in every aspect, the chances, possession, and shots against the Swallow. They just failed to, like, they just lacked confidence in front of goal, I felt. They just had so many opportunities. And, of course, off of the only two chances that De Zerbi's side really had, they conceded. So that was just quite frustrating to see, and especially that we had to push for an equalizer that late on in the game. And it was very frustrating, both of them overall.
So let's talk about Lazio's chances now for the Champions League. Like, on the bright side, they have to make up this match against Udinese. You know, Udinese is in the relegation race, but Lazio clearly is more talented. They have this big match coming up against Milan on Saturday. So if you had to put a percentage, you know, how confident do you feel on Lazio this time making it to the Champions League?
I'm going to have to go just about 50% at around 60, I'd say. The reason for this, like you said, after the match against Milan this upcoming weekend, they really do have one of the easiest stretches until the end of the season. I think they only have Atalanta coming up after that, which is one of the top sides they play against. When you look at different sides like the Milan, Roma, Inter, and Atalanta that are in the top side fighting for that last kind of Champions League squad, or the last two, I should say, they still have to face, if you take a look at Milan here, they're very similar to Lazio with an easier stretch, but Roma still have to play Inter-Juventus, Inter have to play Roma, Juventus, and Napoli, and Atalanta still have to play Napoli and Juventus. So there is a really positive chance of them making it, but as we've seen from this little slip-up here, it really all just comes down to that mental capability and being able to focus on what the actual goal is and how badly they want it. So I'm going with a firm 60% on this one.
Okay, so Lazio don't fully control their destiny, but as you mentioned, they do have on paper what's an easy schedule, although after the last two disappointing results, nothing's a given. But out of the competition, and, you know, maybe I'm too optimistic to kind of put Inter in, but they definitely have a lead over the others. But let's say for the other spots, Lazio's competing with Milan, Atalanta, and crosstown rival Roma. Which of these teams do you fear the most and why?
I'm going to have to say Gasperini's Atalanta. I really feel like they are the Lazio of last season with all the goals they've been putting in and the quality, exciting football they've been putting forward this year under the side. In my opinion, not because I'm just a Lazio fan, I just don't feel Roma's really found an identity this season. And a lot of their top players haven't really been performing. I feel like this summer they are going to have a lot of changes. And additionally to Milan is the second team I'm kind of saying that I'd be more concerned with. Just due to the fact, like I said, they do have one of the easier runs after this weekend against Lazio. But they've been constantly improving under Gattuso, I feel, and especially with the signings of Piatek and Paqueta over the winter there, they've really upped their game. So I'm going to have to say Atalanta first would be the first victim, I guess, coming towards Lazio, and secondly, Milan for that Champions League spot.
Okay, I like it. I think it's objective to say Roma's last, but I guess it's easier for you since you're the crosstown rivals. But I think you could make a great case there. So let's talk about the two players who, for me, in a lot of ways, as they go, so does Lazio. Of course, you know, Acerbi, Lucas Lieva, really, really important players. But the guys that kind of make up a difference are Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto. Now, both of them struggled in the first half of the season, but they've been, you know, I'm not going to answer for you, but just tell me in general, how would you assess their performances in the last 2-3 months?
The last 2-3 months, I feel since January, they've really turned it around, and I feel most of this has to do with the position changes and the tactics that Inzaghi is putting forward. We finally saw that everyone was used to seeing Milinkovic-Savic on the left central midfield role, kind of pressing up more. And same with Luis Alberto, he was just behind Immobile playing in that position. And teams got used to that this year. And we saw that at the beginning of the season, they tried the exact same thing, but it wasn't working out for them. So since January, you've seen Luis Alberto be pulled back a little bit more and giving that Joaquin Correa or Caicedo in that second striker role. But Correa's, or Luis Alberto's gone on the left-hand side of midfield, and Milinkovic-Savic has actually gone on the right. I mean, we've seen that in the last few games that Pirlo's actually been sent to the bench for this, and I feel it's been really good. Obviously, Pirlo is more defensive, so he protects the back end, but when you have a player like Lucas Lieva there, we don't really need two of them. So having Milinkovic-Savic, that bigger body who likes to get forward, and then Luis Alberto being able, the playmaker himself, making a difference and dominating play, we've seen everything going through them really towards goal, and they've been really revitalized since January, since this change, I feel.
Yeah, I certainly agree there. I don't watch them nearly as much as you do. I mean, I'd say I watch about 80% of their matches, but yeah, I agree with that assessment. So let's talk about another player who has really, in Serie A at least, really held some very high standards. And, you know, this season for another striker, probably be a pretty good season, but for the standards that Ciro Immobile has gotten Lazio fans used to, maybe a little bit of a letdown. So let me ask you, if you had to give a grade or assess Immobile's season so far, what would that assessment sound like?
Yeah, like you said there, people really do expect more from him, especially us Lazio, and he hasn't really been delivering like he has before. So I'm going to have to go with a B. It's just been average in my opinion, and there's kind of two sides to this opinion that I feel. On the positive note, he obviously is a leading scorer for Lazio. He scored 14 goals this season in the Serie A, which is very impressive. But it is important to note that four of those have been from penalties. So it's getting close to half of them have just been from the spot. But when you look at a quick comparison, even from last point this season, he scored 26 goals. So it's quite the drastic difference in terms of what he's been able to put through. And I feel another point to add to this is the fact that a lot of these goals, usually when he scored, Lazio were winning. Now it's he's scoring and Lazio might be winning. They might be drawing. They might be losing. So it's not, nothing is really a guarantee. And obviously it doesn't just come down to him, but when he's a leading scorer and he's really an important aspect of this side, when he doesn't perform, I feel like the whole club doesn't perform when they play a game. So an additional point to that, why it's a B, in the Europa League, he only scored one goal. He didn't really contribute that much in their campaign. Obviously, he did have those 4 or 5 assists, I believe he had, but you need a goal scorer. He's the one guy up front that Lazio are playing with. And if he doesn't score, like I said, Lazio's not usually scoring. So on average, or overall, it's just been an average season for him. I'm going to go with a B.
Okay. So let me ask you and try and maybe look at the full season, maybe not too much recently. If you had to pick who the most valuable player on Lazio has been this season, who would it be and why?
Yeah, so I've heard this question in the past, that it's recently from one of my friends. He said, who's Lazio stars? I've heard a lot about Immobile, Luis Alberto, Luis Milinkovic-Savic, but I feel it's been someone totally out of that realm. I feel like it's been Francesco Acerbi overall has been the most valuable player. At the beginning of the season, everyone was talking a lot about him, especially coming in with the goal of replacing De Vrij, which is a huge task. But like we said, he's really stepped forward and shown his qualities and everything that he has to offer to Calcio in general, especially after the career he's had with the cancer he overcame. So like in these matches, we're almost accustomed to like his solid performances. So you almost forget about the work he does. This season, he's only missed one match or just a few in general. And that just shows the quality and the commitment that he has to this team. And he's really shown his leadership. So out of this whole season, I don't feel it's been one of the bigger players that have been valuable. I feel like it's been him in the center of the defense protecting Sirkosha on goal.
Yep. People say that I agree too often with our guests, but yeah, we're completely on the same page there. He's been really, really outstanding. And I think he deserves, I know he's not the youngest guy, but I think he deserves a little bit more love on the Italian national team. So let me ask you, we're going to end it on with this question. This is something that I'm asking all of our guests that cover specific teams. Which players currently on Lazio do you want to see come back next season? So, assume there are no restrictions. I know there's probably a different answer, you know, Champions League, no Champions League. But let's look just ability-wise. If you had, you know, no restrictions, which players would you definitely bring back to the squad next season?
The top players, the most important players, which I believe is most of the starting 11. Mobile, Milinkovic Savic, Luis Alberto, Correa, Strakosha, Lucas Leiva, Acerbi. All those players are really important. I feel like they have the quality to play in the Champions League. It's just a matter of fact of getting there. So in terms of the restrictions aspect, I really hope that they are able to secure a top four spot because I feel Alotito will be kind of forced to make those bigger moves and bring in more important signings to improve certain departments. But yeah, I'd say just the top players on the side. They have a lot of players who they bought over the summer. Who really haven't come into the side. We've seen like Berisha and Dermisi. I remember we talked about last time who's going to make the bigger impact in the second half of the season. And the answer to that has been neither of them because they haven't really seen the pitch or been able to. So the larger players, the top players on the side, I'd like to see come back with the addition of hopefully some others, either way, if they make champions or not.
So, Steve, you do fantastic work. You are anointed Lazio guy. Keep up the great work on the Marzio site. Keep up the great work on the Laziali site. I know you're busy with school and all, but thanks for hopping on and for doing a great job as usual.
Thank you for having me on, David.
All right. Always great to hear from Steve Moore. Really good guy. Really knowledgeable guy. All right, David, you know who's also knowledgeable? Our Twitter listeners who send in absolutely great questions. So let's get to them. First question, very interesting here. Milan hasn't had a field penalty called since February of 2018. Is that a conspiracy or is it just lack of luck?
So you guys know that I'm really not a conspiracy guy. We try as much as possible not to talk about referees much on the podcast because, for one, I think no one's ever going to change their mind on a referee decision. You believe what it is, and that's it. And people get really, you know, sunk into their positions. And, you know, I go on the assumption I follow people in other leagues and, you know, I read your tweets on the Premier League, Alex, and it seems to me bad refereeing is all over the place, not just in Serie A. That being said, you know, Milan not getting a field penalty in over a year in Serie A really does say something. So I'm going to say, and we talked about this on Monday's show, this journalist in Italy, Fabrizio Ravezzani, who I really like, you know, had this tweet that when you look at Milan's squad, they really don't have people, players that would have clout with referees. In Italy, they have a younger team. They have a lot of foreign players. Their captain, Romagnoli, yeah, he plays on the Italian national team, but he's a young player. It shouldn't matter, but I think that stuff does matter. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen moving forward. I think Leonardo, you know, speaking after the Juve match in pretty harsh terms, usually that stuff does have impacts on the match. So let's see what happens here. So I'm not going to chalk it up to conspiracy. I'm going to chalk it up more to lack of clout. Also, keep in mind, Milan, you know, with the league offices, they've had a lot of changes in their front office, different owners. But now, you know, Leonardo's well established. They have Maldini. So maybe things will start to change. So I'm not a conspiracy guy, but the fact that it's been so long, it can be a coincidence either.
Yeah, I normally don't like to talk about officiating or refereeing. However, The officiating in the Premier League this season has been some of the worst officiating, David, I've ever seen in any sport. That's how bad it's been. But staying on Milan, should Milan pursue Rabiot, and can they afford him with their FFP issues?
So Rabiot and Leonardo cross paths at PSG. He is available on a free transfer. But from what I've been hearing, it sounds pretty much certain he is going to be playing in La Liga, either Barcelona, Real Madrid. I know there's been some talk of the Premier League. I don't see him coming to Serie A. I know he was linked to Juve. My colleague Fabrizio Romano had an article saying that this is essentially not going to happen. And look, for Milan, it does make sense to improve the midfield and go for the Bosman-type signings. But I think Rabiot's wages are so what he's going to get on his next deal are so above what Milan currently pays that it would really throw things off. So I appreciate the thought. Quality of player need on Milan makes sense, but I just don't see it for the wages. My inkling is that he'll be playing in La Liga next season.
Very interesting. He's a nice player. I just wouldn't see the need for him on Barcelona after they're getting Frankie de Jong. But moving on. It appears that Spalletti will leave Inter at the end of the season, regardless of where the team finishes. So where do you see him ending up?
So Spalletti has a long-term contract at Inter, I think, through 2022. Getting rid of him, sacking him, Inter would have to pay him out about $20 million, so a lot before taxes, still a lot of money in his pocket. And I agree with the listener, odds are he won't be on Inter even if he finishes in third place. I think Conte is going to come in there regardless. Because he's owed so much money and there's no completely intuitive place for him to go to, my guess is he sits out a year, does a sabbatical like Conte, and just waits and sees what a year from now the landscape is like. You know, could he maybe return to Roma? Keep in mind, it also wasn't that long ago that Spalletti was even linked to Juve potentially when Allegri was gone. Maybe that ship sailed with the way he's handled the media this season, which at Juve definitely wouldn't fly. And look, Spalletti's also managed abroad in Russia. If I had to really bet on it, I would say he sits out a year, collects Inter's money, and then a year from now goes abroad, if I had to bet.
Interesting. I know people may think that I don't like Antonio Conte. It's a little bit more complicated than that. But David, the more and more you mention Antonio Conte and Inter, the more and more I think they're an absolute perfect fit for each other. And Inter will take a step up with Conte at the helm. All right. Next Twitter question. Do you see Juve going all in for Matthias De Ligt? And should they focus on the defense this summer?
Yeah, so we know midfield's been an obsession for Juve fans and to a certain extent the club as well. You know, Matuidi's still a good player. Not sure he can be counted as a full-time starter next season. Khedira is paid like a starter, not healthy enough. We've talked how Pjanic could potentially leave. So look, there's a lot going on in the midfield. On the bright side, Emre Can, when he was healthy, recently played really well. They have Ramsey coming in, Bentancur. I don't think he's a starting caliber player, but at least there's kind of a base there for Juve. I think, on the other hand, the defense and the center back, which really was Juve's strength for so long, is really where they need to focus a lot. We see that without Chiellini. And look, Rugani was really good yesterday. I don't want to take that away from him, but can you really depend on him being the guy? The rest of the sample this season would say no. So De Ligt, definitely, but we know a lot of clubs want him. His transfer fee is going to be really, really interesting. I mean, a young, very young player. He could be leading your defense for 12 years. So I think his price tag is going to be humongous. And Barcelona, I would say, looks like a pretty good bet for him. But Juve has the advantage of their relationship with Mino Raiola, who's handling his next destination. De Ligt last season already visited Juve's facilities. There's a connection there. Let's see what happens. I think Juve getting a top-notch center back this summer, at least one, is equally important, if not more, than a midfielder, if not De Ligt, maybe someone like Manolas would make sense, but definitely look for Juve to be active at that position for sure.
Yeah, it definitely seems like with everything out there, quotes and whatnot, his relationship with Frankie de Jong, it seems like the Ligue de Barca is the top assumption out there. However, just considering what Juventus were used to, as you just said, with their glorified defense, their center backs and Buffon, there are very few young center backs, I feel like, who could carry the torch and rise to the occasion. And everything I see from Matthijs de Ligt is he's not just a great player, he's a great leader. The fact that he's been an Ajax captain for a couple years now as a teenager is just incredible. So he would be a very great get for Juve, and in some ways a needed get for them. All right, David, next question. Interesting one here. Do Napoli need to be worried considering that they are considerably further behind Juventus than they were last season?
So because of scheduling, we had to record today before the Arsenal match, and we'll talk about it on Monday. So look, both you and I expected Napoli to take a step back in Serie A this season. I think there was a lot of indication that we could see that coming. Maybe we were a little bit too pessimistic. I mean, we both had Inter ahead of them, and I doubt that's going to end up happening. But I also said that definitely the gap between Inter and Napoli is considerably smaller than between Napoli and Juve, and that has been absolutely true this season. So look, to me, it really comes down to if Napoli wins the Europa League, this season's a massive success, no matter how you spin it. To me, Napoli took the exact opposite approach of last year. They were out of the Scudetto race, I'd say by November, if not sooner. So they were like, you know, they did well in the Champions League. They were in a super tough group. Once they went to the Europa League, that clearly became the priority. So, you know, if they win the Europa League, it brings some more revenues, and Napoli's already in good financial shape. It could be the springboard for them taking the next step. So I wouldn't be overly concerned, but there's a lot riding with the Europa League for sure. On the bright side for Napoli, they extended their sporting director Giuntoli's contract. He works really well with De Laurentiis on the transfer market. We've talked about it ad nauseum. They're extremely shrewd on the transfer market. They know what to do. I wouldn't be that concerned. I think Napoli, you know, consistently going to be a top 2-3 team in Serie A. Now the question is, can they get over the hump and compete with Juve? And part of me thinks that maybe last year was really their one chance, because Juve, with their revenues and what they do with Bosman signings and whatnot, they just look loaded up front. I'm not sure if they'll ever have a chance like that again, but could Napoli be a team that can compete, you know, to be in the quarterfinals in the Champions League? And then once in a while, maybe get lucky and said, yeah, sure. So I wouldn't be overly concerned, but there is definitely a lot riding with the Europa League, no doubt about it.
Boy, would it be something to see Chelsea and Napoli in the Europa League finals. That would be incredible. All right, David, next Twitter question. Would it be good for Serie A overall if Roma get purchased by the Qatari owners?
So this was great because our friend John Solano was one of the people that broke this news last week. We talked about it on the podcast on Monday. I see a lot of other outlets are talking about it. So credit to John on this story. So look, you know, now there's stories that the fund that owns PSG could buy Roma. Yeah, I mean, if it's them and they invest like they do with PSG, great. You know, there is a lot of debt with Roma. Pallotta is very wealthy and he's put a lot of his own money in that. I'm not sure how much more they could do that with that, but there is the potential that they could have. They have more resources than Pallotta. But the things that remain with Roma challenging are the stadiums, the environment around the team. I'd be curious to see how they navigate that. It seems the city of Rome, both with the stadium and the fans, are a little bit more open to Italian owners as opposed to foreigners. So I'd be curious to see how that is handled. But look, if the Qatari fund that invested a ton in PSG is going to do the same for Roma, that would be great for the club and great for Serie A, no doubt about it.
All right, how about this, David? Simply, is Montella the right choice for Fiorentina?
So I have to say, surprisingly, yes, because since Montella left, both his career and Fiorentina have really taken a turn for the worse. Like, We talked about it on the podcast on Monday, how Fiorentina is like falling behind the Atalanta, the Sampdoria, and the Torinos of the world, if you will, as like the deluxe mid-table team that's borderline competing for a Champions League spot. They were essentially doing that under Montella. They were in fourth place. And they've really taken a step back considerably since he left. And even his career, you know, at Milan, he did win that Super Cup. But beyond that, it hasn't gone well. So I think they kind of needed each other. And look, it was a bad divorce when it happened. He was linked to Napoli. There was his exit clause that Sampdoria didn't pay. But this makes sense. So I'm going to say that while I'm not the biggest Montella fan, I think this might actually work.
All right, well, staying on Fiorentina, David, what plan, if any, do you think the Della Valle brothers have for Fiorentina?
So the Della Valle brothers have owned the club for a while. Can't say that they've invested a ton in the club. They have brought in some signature players in years past, but recently the fact that they have sporting director Corvino, who is one of the best at discovering talents, kind of tells me that maybe they don't want to spend a ton. They just want to find young players and then sell them for profits and start the cycle all over again. Like Florence is kind of an odd place for calcio. It's definitely nowhere near as intense as like being the Roma, the Napoli, I would say even Torino manager. For them, a great season's beating Juve, playing attractive football, like being in the upper mid table. Like they're happy with that. You know, they have the Coppa Italia now, so let's see, maybe they can win that trophy. I would say maybe they're the weakest team in there left, but you never know. So I would say the Della Valle, they kind of know the reality, the expectations there in Florence, and I think they fit in really well into that. So maybe not the most ambitious.
All right, very interesting Twitter question here. Do you feel that Serie A as a whole often takes one step forward and then two steps back?
Yeah, so the listener pointed out to Ronaldo's arrival, the new TV deal, that we had VAR the first season. That was a success. VAR has been kind of a disaster this season. We have the racism issues. Yeah, and I think, you know, this is really beyond Serie A. This is an Italy thing, right? I mean, we've talked about the racism thing, how to me it's really a cultural thing for the whole society, even beyond that. We're seeing some clubs modernizing the stadiums. We see Roma, it's going to be very hard to make that happen. And Napoli, there's a lot going on with potentially having a new stadium. So I would agree with that. Serie A's kind of always been this way. Like they kind of get in each other. The league gets in its own way. But I think this is really an Italian thing. Overall, it's not surprising that the TV deal was really handled more by Pallotta and the foreign owners, and they got it done in a way that made a lot of sense. But for the rest, you know, you are dealing with the league offices and what comes with that. Like Lotito, Lazio's president, is kind of running the federation in a lot of ways. So with everything that comes with that. So I would agree with that assessment. But you know what? In a way, that's also one of the things why I like calcio.
All right, this is also a very interesting question. Do you feel fans' personalities and identities are related to the club they support?
Okay, so here we're going to make some sweeping generalization. So please remember that I said we're going to make some sweeping generalization. So look, you know, to me, you know, how people become fans of a team, you know, if it's the team from your city, you live there, you grew up there, or your parents are from there. Like I'm thinking of a Napoli fan based here in the U.S. because his parents came from Avellino, which feels like half of New Jersey comes from Avellino around the city of Naples, and you're a fan. Because of that, there's the geographic thing. And I think with that, it also kind of you take the character of the city and the personality of the city that comes with that. Like Napoli fans are, you know, kind of their own breed in that regard. I think, you know, if you support Juve out of the blue, you know, maybe you're a little bit of a front runner. And I hate to say it again, a sweeping generalization here. Maybe you were tied to a player, or maybe you like being first, Or maybe you became a Juve fan after Calciopoli and you respected that so many players went down with the club. So I definitely think there is something to this. I think, though, Twitter, too, makes it so much more tribalistic and whatnot. I'm very curious to see the impact of Twitter on fandom as a whole. But in general, prior to this world, I would agree that there usually is a connection between the two. Definitely an interesting question. So I definitely think there is something to it. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think there is something to it. And I'm glad you bring up Twitter, because for years, decades and decades, fandom had nothing to do with football Twitter. But football Twitter is becoming half of fandom, it feels like, these days in football, when players and managers are asked about media or fans. A lot of the time when they say social media, I mean, they mean Twitter. And, you know, having my ear to the Premier League, there are often jokes about Tottenham fans never winning anything and how Tottenham fans have personalities that are okay with being second, or okay with saying, well, next year. And once again, me even saying that is a sweeping generalization. But I think there's legs to it. But I honestly think, to give you a full accurate answer, I would need to think about it a lot longer, because I'm sure there are ones for Chelsea that I might not be aware of that I have myself. So, all right, David, moving away from football for this question, what was your reaction to the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood trailer?
So you guys know I love Tarantino. On the patron question last weekend, I kind of ranked him as my favorite American director with P.T. Anderson. All his movies for me are a big event. So I'm really in, especially because the trailer. I mean, and I've known about this movie. So it takes place in Los Angeles, the late 60s. It's kind of around the Manson murders, although that's not really the main event. And it's DiCaprio, Brad Pitt, basically as a television actor, and his stunt double, and how they navigate through a changing film industry. So I'm in, because I have to tell you, I love Tarantino, but I love more his movies like Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, and Jackie Brown than, say, Kill Bill. I really like Django Unchained, but I like more when he's like in a time that's closer to mine and in a world that I can relate to more. So this is US 60s, 70s. I would imagine there's going to be some criminal underworld aspects that, are going to be very interesting. And that's where I think Tarantino is at his best. Obviously, it has a great cast. You have DiCaprio, Brad Pitt, you have Margot Robbie, you have a lot of the Tarantino classics, Tim Roth, Michael Madsen. So I'm completely in. I can't wait to see it. Tarantino's always said he's going to make 10 movies and retire. They're already advertising this as his 9th movie. Let's see if he lives up to that. I got to say, I wasn't that crazy about The Hateful Eight. I know there's a lot of people that like it. To me, the problem is it committed the biggest sin in a Tarantino movie. It was actually boring at times, and that should never be something that you associate with Tarantino. So I'm 100% in for this movie. Can't wait for it to come out. So we've been covering a lot the race for the Champions League spots in Serie A, which is rather fascinating. But I have to say, the race to avoid relegation is equally intriguing, because we have so many teams involved this year. And look, you know, I'd say it's fairly easy to find people that can talk about the top teams in Serie A, not so much the bottom of the table. So I'm very lucky that I know our next guest, and this is Enrico Passarella, who some of you know on Twitter as @ilguardaline, the linesman in English. He is a calcio expert, not just Serie A and below. You guys can read Enrico over at our friends at Euro Fantasy Game on RotoWire. He's also a writer for JuveFC.com, where he does excellent scouting reports on Juve's opponents. And he also shares some tips on games at oddschecker.it. I saw he posted recently his picks for the Champions League. To me, he's also one of my former colleagues on Di Marzio's site, one of the hardest working guys in this industry. So, Enrico, a real pleasure to have you back on. Bentornato a Calcioland.
Thank you, David. Always a pleasure to be on the podcast.
Okay, Enrico. So before we talk about the race, I'm going to give you guys a very brief recap of the standings, and we're going to work our way up on them. So Chievo, basically, they're done. They have 11 points. We have Frosinone with 23. We have Empoli right now with 28. If the season were to end today, these would be the three teams going back to Serie B. We have Bologna with two more points than Empoli over with 30 points. And then we have we have Spal, 32 points. Udinese, 32. Udinese, though, has one less game, which they'll play against Lazio. I would say Parma and Genoa are in pretty good shape at 34. So yeah, we're going to focus on the teams below. So let's start with Frosinone, Enrico, who I think with the win against Fiorentina, which ultimately cost Pioli his job, you know, they got a lifeline, but they got a tough road ahead. Do you think they have any chance to avoid relegation at this point?
I think it is very minimal of a chance, because 7 points at this point of the season is a lot. It's a lot considering that they have been unable to win consistently at home. They have a tough schedule. They have still they have Inter this week. Then they have Napoli and Milan in the following weeks. And also it is very difficult because they have to make ground not just on one team but on two teams. So they have to run the table and hope two teams really slip in a big way. And we have seen that. The clubs above them, all in all, are in decent shape. They have all been able to pick up wins, also surprising ones. So they have a lifeline, as you said, but it is a really small one.
Yeah, and I have to be honest, I don't know the bottom table nearly as well as you do. And I'd have to say, out of all the teams that we're going to talk about today, and even Chievo, who have some players that have been around for a while, Frosinone is probably the most anonymous to me. Which of the players on Frosinone right now do you think are good enough to catch on in Serie A on another team next season?
Well, we have Camillo Ciano, who is the leading scorer. He has not played a lot recently, but he has been the best player all year. I think that he can probably stay in Serie A in a team in a relegation struggle next year or two, and could be quite serviceable in this part of the standings next year too. He's a veteran. He has not have a lot of experience in Serie A. He was mostly a Serie B player, but this year he has proven to have a Serie A quality. And then we have a few youngsters that were on loan. For instance, I think Andrea Pinamonti, the young striker with an Inter Loani, has shown a lot, especially since January on, when he started to play consistently. He's a modern striker. He can play either next to Daniel Cioffani, so next to a big guy, also next to Camillo Ciano, who is more of a second striker. So he has shown enough mobility, enough versatility. He is also very young, so I think he has a bright career in front of him. And also Luca Balzania, who is on loan from Atalanta. He joined in January. He hadn't played a lot in the first half of the season at Atalanta. Also, we know that Atalanta, the center midfielders, they are pretty well stocked with Martin Deron and Remo Kreuder. But I think this loan spell has been pretty productive for him, and perhaps Giampiero Gasperini will use him a little more next year. Then they have kind of an eternal promise. We call it in Italy with Federico Viviani, that we know he has a lot of quality, a metronome, a deep line playmaker, so quite a particular player that needs the right kind of teammates, the right kind of team built around him. But I think he can be successful even at a bigger club next year.
Okay, interesting. So now let's talk about the two teams who are probably going to decide which one of the two is going to go down. So we have Empoli and Bologna. What's interesting to me is both of them had some coaching changes. We had Mihailovic come in for Pippo Inzaghi, who really seemed in over his head. And we had Empoli, who brought back Andrea Zoli after bringing in Iachini for a little bit. Iachini got off to a pretty good start and then struggled. Out of the two coaching changes, which one of the two do you think is going to have a bigger impact?
I think that Sinisa Mihailovic will have and already has have as a big impact, and I think there is it is simply due to the fact that Aurelio Andreazzoli was already there at the beginning of the season. So on the other hand, Mihailovic joined from the outside and really brought a new voice and a new style in the locker room. And we have seen he has a great command of the squad, and there is a stark contrast compared to Inzaghi, that maybe didn't have the necessary experience at this level to lead them to avoid the relegation. So Mihailovic, a seasoned coach, might be the right guy for the job for Bologna at this point.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot. Bologna right now has two more points than Empoli. If you had to say, which of these two teams has a better chance of avoiding relegation?
I think that probably Bologna, because they have turned it around with already with Mihailovic. They have probably a little more quality, a little more playmakers in the roster. They also have the match with Empoli at home, and we know Empoli has been even though they play this really pleasing style, this proactive style, they have really struggled to pick up points on the road, and they also concede a lot. So even though Empoli is more pleasing, I think Bologna is maybe your prototypical relegation struggler, who is able to tighten up the defense and pick up some great wins, while Empoli always needed to play really well and in order to win, and maybe they will be not able to do it consistently.
Okay, let's talk about the next two teams. So Spal and Udinese have a little bit of a cushion compared to the others, and these are two different teams historically. I mean, Udinese for a while was, you know, a good team in Serie A. They've struggled recently. Spal got back to Serie A last season for the first time in a while. Out of these two, who do you think is more at risk at potentially getting relegated?
I think Spal is more at risk. They've had this little winning streak recently. They won three in a row before losing to Cagliari in the last weekend. Because every win for them is pretty much of a grind. They win 1-0, 2-1. They might have troubles picking up a win regularly. While Udinese, I think maybe with Igor Tudor, they found a coach that can be an epidemium between the two extreme styles they had with Julio Velasquez and Davide Nicola. Perhaps they can now perform well at both ends, while before they were unable to. And I think Udinese, even though they are in the relegation race, they have really underachieved so far and have a pretty good roster that could possibly lead them to a Serie A final stretch of the season.
Okay. So let me ask you gave us some really intriguing names on Frosinone. Out of these four teams that we just talked about, so Empoli, Bologna, Spal, and Udinese, Are there some players that stood out to you this season for a particularly good reason, or just players that you think our listeners should be aware about?
I think that at this point, Manuel Lazzari from Spal and Rodrigo De Paul from Udinese are pretty well-known players. They are played with their national teams, and I think they are most likely set to join a big club this summer. I think that some of them, Udinese have a few other quality elements. Ignacio Pusseto and Juan Musso, they have joined this summer. They have really already shown a lot of quality. And also Andrea Petagna in Spal has had a pretty significant leap from his year at Atalanta, where he didn't score a lot. And he doesn't look like it, but he's still very young, so he can maybe grow furthermore. And also Mo Fares, who was at Verona last year, and he stayed in Serie A with Spal, is a pretty dynamic wing back like Manuel Lazzari. Maybe he needs one or more seasons, but he has quality. I think people also know Rolando Mandragola is coming off two great goals, and probably also Eric Pulgar, who has scored a lot on penalties recently. Also at Bologna, I think Riccardo Solini, since Sinisa Mihajlovic has taken over, he has been pretty solid with more playing time. He's a pretty interesting winger, and he also is a Juventus Rulani. And to conclude, out of Empoli, we know that Fiorentina has already signed for next summer Ahmed Traoré, who was the better prospect also because he's only 18 years old. But they also have Rade Krunic, who is, I think, a very modern, very complete midfielder, has a big presence offensively. And also Ismael Benacer, who is a classical metronome, who has already been leaked. Linked that with two big clubs. I think these two plus the right back Giovanni Di Lorenzo are a lock not only to stay in Serie A, but maybe move to a very important club this summer.
Very interesting. So now I'm going to ask you briefly on Serie B, because when we have a new season in Serie A, you're always are the guest that tells us on the newly promoted teams, look out for these players. So I know you're calling in from Padova, my hometown there, and our Padova is not doing too great this season in Serie B. But tell us about some Serie B standout players. But the rule is you can't say Tonali, who everyone and their mother has been talking about. Half of the people haven't seen him play. But aside from Tonali, any other names in Serie B we should be keeping our eye on?
Yes, nobody is quite a generational talent like Tonali. But for instance, we have Davide Okereke out of Spezia, who is a speedster up front. We see a similar player like Christian Kouame have a big impact at Genoa in his first season, and Okereke is putting up even better numbers than Kouame, and so he can be a big piece next year if somebody decides to bring him over. Staying with the strikers, I like a lot Mancini from Cittadella, who is on loan from Spal. He has joined only in January, but he has scored already 9 times. So a really terrific scorer. He can do damage with the headers. He's pretty mobile. A pretty also passionate scorer, very good in the box. Another pretty well-known player is Andrew Gravillon, a defender in Pescara, who is under control of Inter. That was, and he was at Benevento last year. Very good defender, very solid. Also pretty technical for his role, very physical. I think we will see in Serie A next year pretty much for sure. There are a couple guys at Perugia, Bido, who is a second striker, who had a terrific start, maybe been slumping a little, but I think a very interesting little striker. And also he's not super young, but I think it's worth to mention Valerio Verre, who has been in Serie A with the Sampdoria, who is still on loan from Sampdoria, who has, he has been a terrific this year. He has scored 12 goals out of the midfield, so very good number. Maybe if Sampdoria decides to cash in on one of their midfielders, they have some good ones for sure. Maybe Valerio Verre will be able to stay on the roster and contribute in a big way. And I would like to mention also three players that maybe their roles isn't totally defined yet, but they have been able to make an impact despite being obviously young and playing in not very big teams. Gennaro Tutino, Gaetano Castrovilli. Tutino is at Cosenza, Castrovilli is at Fiorentina, at Cremonese on loan from Fiorentina, while Tutino is on loan from Napoli, and Di Mariano at Verona. Three, I would say, they are all three offensive players. They can play wingers, they can play second strikers. Castrovilli can play in the midfield too. And they've had a pretty big season considering their young and the level of their teams.
Outstanding. I'm going to add some of these because unlike the real Padova, my Padova in FIFA is doing really well. So I'm going to add some of these. So it sounds like you are big on Tonali. I didn't ask you on it, but you think the hype is legit? You think Tonali is as good as people say?
Yeah, I think so. And I also think, though, that since it looks like Brescia will be able to move to Serie A next year, if a team decides to maybe buy him this summer and leave it at Brescia where he's already comfortable, I think he can really have a big season and also be fully ready to make the jump to a top team next year. He's already played with really great command despite being very young. And I think he has a very, very bright season in front of him.
Very interesting. Enrico, always a pleasure. I always learn so much having you on CalcioLand. So a real pleasure. We look forward to chatting with you again soon. Everyone follow Enrico at Guardaline on Twitter. A lot of really great information. All his articles are fantastic. So grazie mille, Enrico. It was a real treat to speak to you.
Thank you to you, David, and see you next time.
That's the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to everyone who sent in a question. As you guys know, we record a lot of these. So if you have another question on Serie A, transfers, TV, music, film, please send it in using the CalcioLand hashtag. And if you enjoyed the show, this is a free show available to all. Please leave us a review on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. If you leave a comment, Alex and I read them all. And these testimonials are great because they are from our listeners. They help us attract a bigger audience. And if you like all the content on the CalcioLand podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. We have various tiers for you just to listen enhanced version of the podcast. We have a tier where you can read a lot of original blogs from me. We'll have Alex once in a while do a video, and I answer a lot of questions there. I think that'll be a lot of fun year-round, and especially during the transfer window. So thank you very much for the support, and we look forward to chatting with you in the next few days.